into teams of warriors, gladiators. Battle it out with no champion crowned. There is but one solution.
We're headed for Golden Point.
This, dear listeners, is the Golden Point.
Hello and welcome to episode 7 of the Golden Point. It is Mac and myself here tonight. No Drew with us once again. He's getting a bit slack with his appearances on the podcast. We're going to go through most of our regular segments tonight, round recap, fans' verdict, a bit of trivia, a bit of who am I. We're also going to do a bit of a preview for the upcoming rounds. You know, it is almost halfway through the week. So we're going to kick things off with a quick recap of the games that have just gone over the Easter long weekend. First game up was Bulldogs South. Bulldogs getting the win there, 24-9. Only quick talking points. I think Leachow benched after 25, didn't come back on for the game. South held scoreless in the second half, and Frawley getting his third win. So a good win for the Dogs, and they look good. 3 wins on the trot.
Yeah, 3-for-3 for Frawley as well, which is, I don't think that's any coincidence. I think he's done a lot for that team, just coming in the way how he has. And Leisha leaving after 25 minutes, you notice a huge difference. It's the service from dummy half immediately changed. You know, the forwards, they seem like they were getting the ball and having to stop and sort of catch it behind them, then try and run forward, and that all changed when Mabai went to hooker. So positive signs for the Dogs, really. I think they're looking very good with the change they've made.
Yeah, he looks the goods, Frawley. I think I've said it a few times on the podcast. I think Mabai really struggled to guide the team around, especially guide those big forward packs. And the Bulldogs, they have one of the best forward packs in the game on their day. And we need a good halfback there that can guide them around. And I think Frawley's definitely doing that better than Mabai has been. And I totally agree with the service out of dummy half. Leach just wasn't up to it. I think possibly going back to New South Wales Cup, and he might have half a season there. Who knows? He might get picked up by another club. Who knows what's going to happen in the NRL? But I think he would definitely benefit from going back to the New South Wales Cup and maybe just honing his skills, refining them, getting, you know, the kinks out. Because, look, there's quality there. He is a quality player, but he's not playing quality football and hasn't for some time. So I still think he has a future in the NRL, but I think he's definitely got to, you know, go back to the basics, get his passing right. He's got to be crisper, like you said, service out of dummy half better, maybe just reshape his game in a different way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Second game on the Friday. So we had 3 games on the Friday. Second one was the Roosters Knights. So the Roosters coming away with a big win there, 24-6. It seems like a bit of a, you know, one-sided affair, but I think the Knights were still in it for a fair bit of the game there. As always, they've shown heart. I know a lot of people don't like that saying, but I don't think it. You can explain the Knights and how they play any better than saying they have heart, because they really just, they just gutted out. There was Roosters' first win in 3 weeks, had 2 losses on the trot after having a good start to the season, so they're back in the winner's circle. What do you make of that one?
Yeah, no, good for the Roosters to get back in there. Obviously not, like, a convincing win, but can't say convincing because it's against the Knights.
That's unfair.
I know, but yeah, the big winner I thought was the crowd. I think they got over 20,000 there, which is really good to see. You know, it sort of, it made it a little bit more special.
No, Knights fans, they have to be applauded. Best fans in the game, no doubt. Mm-hmm. I mean, their team has really struggled these last 2 seasons. That doesn't need to be said. But their fans just turn out week in, week out. You can't say really any other team would be like that. Maybe the Broncos, because they do have passionate fans, but there's no Sydney team that would do that.
Mm.
So, yeah, great for them, and let's hope the Knights can get another win on the board soon enough. Third match on Friday night, arguably the match of the round, was the Broncos and the Titans. Broncos coming away with that one 24-22. We had James Roberts scoring a hat-trick. The third try in that hat-trick was only a minute or two left, charged down by Matt Gillette, passed off to Roberts, who ran away and scored the try, put the Broncos in the lead. The Titans almost winning it after the bell. Anthony Don just couldn't hang on to the ball, but really good game. And yeah, another great Queensland derby.
Yeah, they're setting the standard, really, those Queensland teams, without a doubt. You got to feel sorry for the Titans, you know, a team that has just been absolutely decimated by injuries this season, and they really put up a fight, and they probably didn't deserve to lose that one. But yeah, obviously, you know, in the end, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah. No, it's a shame for the Titans with Proctor and Hayne still out. I mean, sure, Hayne wasn't in the best form before he got injured, but they are their 2 biggest players. They're their marquee guys, and it's not easy when they're out. So I think once they come back, I think, I mean, Titans were competitive on the weekend, so I think they'll continue to be competitive this year, and I think they'll still push for a top 8 place.
Yeah.
So then we move on to the Saturday games. We had Storm Manly, another close game. Storm winning that one 30-26. It was Manly's second loss in a row after they showed quite a bit of form in the early rounds of the season. It's a high-scoring match as well, 30-26. I didn't see too much of this one, but yeah, good win for the Storm, and they stay up the top with the Dragons.
Yeah, some pretty bad defence from both teams, really. Like, Felice Cathusi sort of has walked over the line a couple of times, and it's just really both sides just had real lapses here and there, which probably, like, I enjoy attacking football, so it was an exciting one to watch, but really some worrying signs, probably more so for the Storm.
Okay.
I would say just for those small periods where they just couldn't seem to answer it.
Yeah, well, it's weird. Like, two teams that have shown form this season, obviously Storm only have one loss, Manly now with two losses in a row, but it is weird to see two teams with form score so many points, especially a team like the Storm. Storm have, I would say, the best defence in the competition. Their try line is, you know, it's like a wall. It's pretty hard to get through. So for them to drop 26 points is quite a big deal.
Definitely, yeah.
But always good to see some high-scoring matches, like you said. The next game up was the Raiders-Warriors. Raiders coming away with this one 22-8. Foran, obviously, was not the key man that the Warriors needed this week. He had his first loss of the season for the Warriors. Would I be wrong in saying that?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Yeah, you are right.
So, I didn't see much of this one as well. I was down in AFL Heartland this weekend, so I missed most of it. But yeah, what did you make of that one?
I didn't see a whole lot as well, to be honest. But one thing I did see was Jared Croker make one of the best try savers I've ever seen. That was just a phenomenal tackle. It really just, you know, showed why he's such a good player. And just the Raiders really coming to form, sort of showing that form that we expected to see in the preseason just come to life. And I think very good signs for them to be able to push for like a top four spot like many have expected.
Yeah, definitely. Starting to secure their spot in the top eight there, which is good for Raiders fans. So the next game up was the Dragons and the Cowboys. So obviously the Cowboys were without JT, their heart and soul, so never easy without him. And it was a 28-22 win to the Dragons, who kept their spot at the top of the table.
Yeah, game of two halves. Dragons just absolutely decimating them in the first half, and then just falling asleep. Almost just being like, oh, this one's done and dusted.
Yeah.
Boy, let's go to the pub, and they forgot there was a second half to play. They were lucky to get away with a win, really.
Yeah, big concern, yeah. Was it 20? Did they 28 drop? Two, yeah, 28-2 or something like that. Yeah, which is crazy. It's not a good sign. I think, you know, you've got to, if you're going to stick it with the big boys for the length of the season, you've got to be playing at least 60 to 80 minutes.
And also, John Asiata playing in the halves. What a machine.
Yeah, I've heard about this all over social media on the weekend. I saw the highlights, but I didn't see a whole lot of the game, so not sure what it is, but they seem to be loving him.
There were calls for him to replace Kronk at the Storm afterwards. You know, kicking game was amazing. Like, that was really the most impressed by. Wow. He was putting up some bombs that were an inch from the goal line and stuff like that. Just amazing. I saw that, like, they in the pregame they switched around Hampton for him. Yeah. And I was like, what are they doing? Okay. There's like another forward there, and then next thing he was just JT and like a fat suit or something like that, because He was quite huge compared to JT. But
so did Hampton come on later on?
Yeah, he came on and played some poker.
Okay.
And just didn't really sort of get a full 80 minutes. I thought he would. Yeah.
That's interesting. Kind of sucks with Ben Hampton, doesn't it? Yeah. Like, he had a really good season with the Storm a couple of years ago. And then, you know, he's just been back and forth every now and again. He's been moving all over the country. And then JT gets injured. It's like, here's my go.
Exactly,
I'm going to replace this guy. And then, I'm going to play John Asiata instead of you.
The front row forward in there.
And the guy happens to have the match of the round. So, yeah, Ben Hampton has obviously done something wrong in a past life. So then we move on to probably the game you don't want to talk about the most, which is the Sharks-Panthers. Or you might want to talk about it the most. You might want to vent. Who knows? But Sharks-Panthers. Sharks with a big win, 28-2. Show that they're the defending premiers in that one.
Yeah, it was the most frustrating game I've seen the Panthers play, I think. I kind of feel like we've lost it heading into it because of the team that was selected. Like, I don't know what Griffin is thinking, naming Hiko on the bench and having him come on and play second row every week.
I knew there was a vent in there somewhere.
I could go on about it for hours because it annoys me so much. It makes no sense.
No, it's a weird ploy.
You've got Tyrone Peachy playing centre. You've got Hiku playing second row.
Yeah.
You've got forwards who are sort of half running it up, and then you've got backs who are trying to play like forwards. It's all over the place. And none of it makes any sense.
Peachy with potentially the hit of the round as well.
Yeah, that was beautiful.
Looked like a locks hit there. Didn't like a centre hit.
Yeah, it's like they want to fit Peachy in the side however they can. So they say, oh, hey, you're doing well at centre, so stay there. It's like, just chuck him in the second row. Let him do his thing. Let him play his natural position. But
yeah, let him roam around a little bit more or something. Like, Hiku is he's a centre, playing in centre. It doesn't make any sense to me, but I don't particularly care what they do. Big win for the Sharks. You know, they're coming good now, the Sharks. They had a good win over the Storm last week, who, incidentally, they also kept scoreless. I saw some statistic during the week. I can't actually remember what it is. I'm just going to make it up because we don't research on this show.
It becomes fact as soon
as it's something. It's something like it's the first time since the 90s, we'll say, since a minor premiers have kept the team scoreless 2 weeks in a row.
Okay, that does actually sound kind of familiar. I remember someone saying now, like, Thurming is potentially being, two-time champions.
Yeah. And I feel like I read an article today, and I don't know if it's right. I think it might be, but I believe it's 4 wins in a row for the Sharks.
Really?
Yeah, someone wrote that. I was like, it's definitely 3, but I don't know if it's 4. But if it is, I mean, they're probably right. I'm sure they did their research better than I did. But that's definitely under the radar. I didn't see that coming at all. I was kind of thinking, they're going okay. They're not really playing that well.
Yeah, definitely.
4 wins in a row is very well. On to the last game of the round, the Eels versus the Tigers. And everyone thought it was going to be Mitchell Moses' last game for the Tigers, but it might have been his first game for the Eels, because if you read social media, you'll find that most people said that he played abysmal and he was just basically gifting the Eels the game and the 2 points. So help him get into the semi-finals later. Eels coming away with a victory, 26-22. Yeah, it was a bit of a close one. They kept kind of going back and forth in the scores a bit there.
Yeah, a bit of an exciting one to finish off the round. Mm. Not too much I can think of. Some nice tries were scored. Bit of good attacking footy, but yeah, definitely. It's a shame that the Mitchell Moses stuff really overshadows it.
It does.
Well. Like, it's kind of annoying, really. And you look at like all the post-match interviews, and it's all like, oh, what do you think about Mitchell? Is he going to be at the club next week? And it's like, I hope he is, but how are we supposed to know? You know, it's just stupid.
It's frustrating, and that's why they just need to get it sorted. The Tigers need to nip it in the butt. We've seen a bit of news in the last day or two, and they've said that no, we're going to keep him for the rest of the season. But journalists were also saying today, the day before, that he was leaving after this game. So can't trust anything. But so rugby league can throw up anything. Tomorrow he might be playing for the Panthers. So that's the round recap done. For the Easter weekend, it was a bit of a long round because there seemed to be games for a long time. I guess it wasn't any longer than a normal round. It seemed to be a little bit, didn't it?
I think you get those 3 games on Friday and you just feel like it's Saturday, and then it's like, true. It's still going. And then obviously Monday night football returning as well.
Yeah.
For, the first time this year.
Well, that is the recap done, so we'll move on to fans' verdict. We have 3 fans' verdict this week. So we asked a couple of questions on our Twitter throughout the week. We're asking, who do you think the most overrated player was, or who do you think the most underrated player was? So we got a fair few responses there, and through those responses, we came up with 4 options for each. So we'll start with the overrated player first. The options we got given were Aaron Woods, Matthew Moylan, Blake Ferguson, and Luke Brooks. So if you want to, in your response for this one, if you want to maybe give your most overrated player, and then if it's not one of these 4, give one of those 4 as well.
Okay. I don't know. I find it hard to say who my most overrated player is. Maybe Mitchell Pearce, just because I don't like Pearce, and he always seems to be in talk for Origin or be in talk for being the best halfback in the game. And I never really see it. So I would say Pearce is my most overrated player. In terms of from the poll, I would say Blake Ferguson, not to pick on the Roosters, but he, for some reason, gets picked for Australia, is constantly talked about as being the best outside back ever sort of thing. And it just, he's not there. He's a bit slow. He's a big guy. He pushes people over, sure, but he never does anything that extraordinary.
Yeah. Well, feel free to pick on the Roosters as much as you like on this podcast. That's actually welcomed. Pearson's an interesting one. You'll definitely know if you're a weekly listener of this podcast, and I'm nowhere near a fan of Mitchell Pearce, but I think he's Origin overrated, rep overrated, I'll say. I do think he's a pretty good club halfback, but he just doesn't turn up for New South Wales, so I don't want him to pick there. My pick was Matt Moylan. Now, I'm not saying Matt Mullen's a bad player. I actually think Matt Mullen's a very good player, but I just think he's overrated.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people, we got a lot of discussion on this question, which is great. We love the discussion on the Twitter. And there's a lot of, I'm not going to say confusion, but there was a lot of differing opinions on what overrated meant. Some people think how can you have played rep football and be overrated? I mean, to me, if you play rep football, there's a better chance you're overrated. But anyway, so in my opinion, overrated for Matt Moylan is because I think he's a really good player, but I don't think he's good enough to be playing for New South Wales or Australia at the moment. Who knows? He's still young Matt Moylan, as the newspapers like to report, so maybe in 10 years' time. But I do think he's a little bit overrated. I think he's a good player, but I do think that he kind of still needs to find his own in that Panthers team. People are saying in the future he's going to play at 5A, he's playing at fullback now, who knows? But anyway, I don't think he should be playing for New South Wales. But going off the poll, we got Aaron Woods at 32%, Matt Moylan at 15%, Blake Ferguson at 20%, and our winner, Luke Brooks, at 33%.
Really?
Yeah, it's surprising.
I don't think anyone read a Luke Brooks.
That's the thing that I get too, yeah. And that's why I think there was a little bit of confusion or differing opinion on what overrated meant.
See, I feel a bit sorry for Woods as well. I don't think Woods is overrated at all.
I don't either. I think he's a little bit of a bandwagon hater. Mm. I think people are kind of jumping on him in the last month or two because there's been so many reports saying he's going to get $1 million, and we'll touch on that with another question here. But I do think that a lot of people are seeing that figure, seeing what journalists are reporting, going, he's not worth that. He's overrated.
Yeah.
Which is fair enough. Look, if he's getting $1 million a year, that is too much for Aaron Woods. But I do think he's a very solid player.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll move on to underrated now. So we got a lot of responses to this one. There's obviously, with underrated overrated, people want to throw out their favorite player and say, no, this guy, he's the best. So we got a lot of responses, which is great, but we were able to whittle it down to four, and we got Jared Kroger, Andrew McCulloch, Ash Taylor. Is that Ash Taylor? I feel like it's another Taylor. Mitch Orbison.
Elijah Taylor.
So Jared Kroger, Andrew McCulloch, Elijah Taylor, and Mitch Orbison. So again, if you want to maybe give your underrated, if there isn't one there, and then your four.
It's a good list. It's a really good list. Mine would be on that list, which is Jared Kroger. I think for him, like, the fact he isn't considered the best centre at the Raiders, because it seems like Lulua is the man of the moment, but it is insane. Well, I mentioned him earlier about his try-saver on the weekend, and he's the complete package of centre. You know, he can score tries, he can kick goals, he can save tries, he'll do it all, and for some reason he gets overlooked for Origin, he gets overlooked by a lot of people. I'd say a lot of people forget to even plays until he kicks a goal or something like that. Maybe it's the headgear, he takes that off and everyone's like, who's that? And then, I don't know, but he's definitely one of the most underrated players. I think Mitchell Orbison as well is a good one. There is another guy that people forget about, but when he gets to play second row like he is this season, you really see his potential. And if he'd been sort of said, hey, we're going to make you a second row, we're not going to like screw you around, put you at hooker, put you at centre and stuff like that earlier in his career, I think he could have gone on to play like Origin and for Australia and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, someone that's a really good line runner, really good in defence, and again, another complete player that just isn't recognised for that.
Yeah, well, I definitely agree with Kroger. He's the main man for me. I'm a massive Jared Kroger fan. I'd say he's one of my favourite players to watch in the game. I think he's kind of a quintessential centre, and I think a lot of people dismiss him because of that. They want the flashy centres like BJ Lulawai. They want these guys that are throwing flick passes, that are sort of breaking tackles, that are running over guys. They want people that are doing exciting things. And Lulawai does that, but he also has brain snaps every single game. And he makes probably just as many errors as he does flashy moments. So for me, that's not the kind of player I want in my team. And if it's going to, we're talking about New South Wales here, I don't want someone like Lulawai there because of that reason. In a game like Origin, Lulawai is the kind of player you can't have because you can't afford to make one mistake.
Yeah.
In NRL, you can. You can make a mistake and make up for it. Origin, the scores are, we had, well, how many games do we have that are under 10 points by both teams? So we need a player like Jared Kroger that does the little things right. Like you said, that try saver. How valuable is a try saver in Origin? That will win you the game if you do that. The teams only get over the line once or twice in a game. So if you can stop one of them, that's just invaluable. His goal kicking is also fantastic. There's every chance he's going to break El Mazri's record when he's, 30, 35. So he's got plenty of time to do it. Definitely Kroger. I think everyone on the list is very underrated. Andrew McCulloch is a fantastic player. Definitely one of the best hookers in the game. I think he's no doubt second in line for Cameron Smith, number 9 at the Maroons there. He's had a great season so far. I think he'll be a sneaky for the World Cup later in the year as well.
Oh, yeah.
Elijah Taylor, I've not seen a whole lot of Elijah Taylor play, but he has so much respect in the game. So it's hard to rule out a guy like that.
Apparently not by Anthony Griffin.
I don't value any opinion of Anthony Griffin. No, Elijah Taylor, there was a meme I saw the other day, and I think it's something I've seen plenty of times, and it was something like, he's the kind of guy, this wasn't about Elijah Taylor, someone made a quote that was, he's the kind of player, be the player you want your teammates to play with, and it was like, so be like Elijah Taylor. And I guess that would probably sum him up. He's a no-nonsense, does the hard work kind of stuff.
You can literally play him anywhere from 1 to 13, yeah. And he'll play his heart out.
Yeah, it's amazing that the Panthers let go, to be honest with you. And then Mitch Orbison, like you said, I agree with everything you said. He's probably one of the best line runners in the game. If there's a hole, he'll find it on the weekends and in the NRL. Okay, and the last... Oh, I didn't give the percentages. So we'll start at the bottom. Mitch Orbison, 19. and then, look, this is a hard list. I don't think there's a loser on this list. So Mitch Orbison, 19%. Andrew McCulloch, 24%. Elijah Taylor, 25%. And Jared Kroger at the top with 32%.
That's good.
We have some smart followers on Twitter.
Absolutely.
And the last question, we already touched on it, but is Aaron Woods worth $1 million a season?
No. No, any front rower paying them $1 million, you're going to look at it and you're going to go, What are we doing? Are we really going to put an eighth of our salary cap towards a front rower? And that's nothing against front rowers. They do the hard yards. They really do, like, you know, do that work that no one else wants to do. But at the same time, you know, Woods is, what, he's late 20s now or something like that, and he's probably coming towards the end of his career in many ways, or probably he's probably hit the best form of his career already. So the question really needs to be asked is, you know, are you going to get value for money if you're going to pay him $1 million a season? And I just don't see it. I really don't think you get what James Graham can do for you, where he's going to be able to like throw the short balls or anything. You're just going to get a guy who can run hard and run straight. And that, for me, would be like a 750K player. Not a million. A million's just over the top, unless the salary cap increases dramatically.
Yeah, I think I made the point to you earlier in the week that a prop is just not worth $1 million because you can find a good prop if you throw a dart. You'll hit one. Props are pretty easy to come by. A good fullback is few and far between. Someone like a James Tedesco doesn't pop up every week. You can go around the competition, and most of those front rowers have probably been called the best front rower in the game at some point. Front rowers don't necessarily or don't normally have 3, 4, 5 years of being the best front rower in the game. They go through patches where they're the best front rower. It's a position where if you're on fire, you're on fire, and if you're not, you're just good. You're probably not bad. It's a position that, for me, is probably 700, 750 is the most we should be looking at. Someone like Woods, I do believe, is one of the better front rowers in the game, consistently probably one of the better ones. He's does have a good step on him, has a good running game in open space, probably has limited ball skills compared to some of the other front rowers, like you mentioned, James Graham. So, no, I don't think he's worth $1 million a season. And he's definitely, I don't think, worth replacing someone like James Graham to bring him to your club, which the Bulldogs are reportedly doing. But, again, who knows what the media actually knows. So, no, I think we both said no, and pretty much every other person said no. So, this was a huge poll for us. We got the most responses we've ever had to a poll. I think it was 313 in the end. We had yes got 8% and no got 92%. So
Wow. That's
a lot of no's. So a lot of people agree. I'm hoping that the Bulldogs agree as well that he's not worth $1 million and don't throw that at him, because like you said, that's a lot of your salary cap. All right, well, that's fans' verdict done. So now we're going to move on to 60 seconds of trivia. So I'm going to get the clock rolling here. You tell me when to go and we'll go.
All right, 3, 2, 1. Which team outside the 8 has a positive differential?
Pass.
3 players currently lead the league in try assists with 8. Name one.
Cooper Cronk?
No. Which player has had the most running meters in round 8?
Really didn't watch much football on the weekend. who did well? Billy Slater?
No. Which game had the most points scored in round 8?
Melbourne Manly?
Yes. Who scored the most NRL.com fantasy points in round 8?
Oh, no idea. Andrew McCulloch?
No. Positive differential for outside the 8?
I don't even know who's in the 8, honestly, with you. Let's go with North Queensland.
No. 1 of 3 players that lead the league in try assists?
Mitchell Pearce.
No. Which player had the most running meters in round 8?
James Graham.
No. Who scored the most fantasy points?
Mitchell Pearce.
Oh, that was one from five.
That was tough.
All right, I'll go through them quickly. So which team outside the eight has a positive differential? That is the Seagulls. I think it's they have about seven is their differential. So three players currently lead the league in try assists with eight. Name one. So we wanted either Josh McCrone, Gareth Widdop, or Cody Walker. So two Dragons players right up there. Which player had the most running meters in round eight? It was Jared Wallace from the Titans with 264 running meters, which is pretty insane. You correctly answered the highest scoring game, which is the Seagulls and the Storm with 56. And the player with the most NRL.com fantasy points in round eight was James Roberts, thanks to his hat-trick, with 103. So that is trivia.
Okay, we'll just forget about that one really quickly. I mean, that's what you get when you don't watch much football on the weekend.
Absolutely.
Okay, so that is trivia done. We're going to move on to a quick preview of round eight. Let's have a go at Friday night's game. No, Thursday again this week. We've got Raiders versus Manly.
I miss Thursday. Raiders Manly. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one. Obviously, Raiders are on fire at the moment. They're in form. Manly's going a bit the other way. I think it'll be a high-scoring one, similar to the Storm and Seagulls game, but I can't see the Raiders losing this one.
Yeah, so three wins in a row for the Raiders, so looking at fourth here. I definitely would be tipping the Raiders with this one. I think Manly will be in it, though, so I think it will be a close one, but I agree with you, probably high-scoring. Then we've also, on the Friday, got Rabbitohs versus the Broncos.
Yeah, that should be another really good one. Rabbitohs have really been that surprise team of the round. Obviously coming up with a loss last week, but still looking a lot better than many predicted. Still, I can't see the Broncos dropping this one. You know, they're again in form. They've got some good players. Cody Nikorima filled in great at halfback for Hunt, and obviously he'll be looking to do the same again. So, should be a good game. Pretty good Friday night, actually.
Yeah, this will be a close one. Both teams have been up and down this season. Broncos only got the one more win over the Rabbitohs. I'm actually tipping the Rabbitohs. I think that will be a little bit of an upset this week. Broncos travelling away from Brisbane. Friday night will be familiar to them, though. I think I'm tipping Adam Reynolds to have a really good game with this one. I think the pressure's going to start to really be on to retain his Origin jersey from last year. So I think he's got to step up. I saw pretty positive signs in the Rabbitohs last week. John Sutton had a really poor game. He let in a couple of tries, so I'm tipping him to have a really good game too.
Okay.
Then we've got the Eels versus the Panthers.
Yeah, that one's an interesting one. It's, you know, even as a Panthers fan, it's hard to tip them at the moment. They're in all sorts, and hopefully they'll turn it around. Bryce Cartwright apparently has a very strong chance of returning. He's named, I think, at number 21. So we'll see what happens there. If he returns, they're a lot better chance because they really need that attacking spark. And the Eels, they're obviously playing some good footy at the moment. They're some good attacking footy anyway. Considering they're missing Bevan French, they're doing quite well at sort of filling that void.
Yeah, I'm tipping the Panthers for this one. I think they'll turn it around. I think they'll get a rev up during the week from Hook, and they'll turn it around. I see them having a win. Maybe the Eels will be a little bit deflated because it feels like the Mitchell Moses thing has died down for this week. So we'll look on to next week. So then we've also got the Cowboys versus the Knights on Saturday.
Yeah, that should, you'd imagine, be a big win by the Cowboys. The Knights, I hope, could turn it around and might perhaps provide an upset. Obviously, the Cowboys' record without JT is pretty abysmal, so who knows what will happen there. But, you know, you can't see just the battle of the forwards. You know, I just think they'll end up running over them in the end.
Yeah, most likely, but because I love an upset, I'm just going to go the upset again. I think the Knights are going to finally have a win here. I think they're going to go up to North Queensland and ruin their weekend. Wow. So I'm tipping the Knights to have a win because they're going to show plenty of heart. All right, so then we've got Sharks versus the Titans. Sharks, like we said, four wins on the trot, going for fifth. Titans really struggling. They really need a win. What do you see with this one?
Jared Hayne and Kevin Proctor both named on the extended bench, with both probably likely to come back, I think. I think if they play, I think the Titans are actually a really good chance of pulling off an upset here. I think the Sharks have been really good, but I also, I don't know, for some reason I can't take them to that next level in my mind. I always consider them to be a team that could lose on the weekend. I know it's harsh, but yeah, I'm going to go the Titans in that one.
I think I felt the same all through last season. I ended up winning the premiership, so made me look like an idiot. I'm going to go with the safe bet here and go the Sharks. I see them being too good for the Titans, even if Hayne and Proctor do come back. I think they might need a couple of weeks to settle into the groove again. We've got the Tigers and the Bulldogs on Sunday. So Tigers will probably be with Mitch Moses. It seems like they're going to stick with him for another week. Dogs on the trot with three wins on the trot. So, yeah.
The thing that annoys me the most about this is the fact that Frawley is still being named in the number 20 jersey. That just, it annoys me so much. It's, why can't Dez just be a normal person? Like, honestly, it's like, obviously you're going to play him. Why not just name him at least on the bench? But anyway, I think the Dogs have been playing very well. I think they've turned it around since Frawley's been in that team, and I think they'll do it again.
I heard a story from Matty Johns. I can't remember if he said it on his radio show or if he's written it in an article. He said, one day Dez called him and he said, I've been listening to your show, Matty, the Grill Team on Triple M. He said, I've been noting down your callers, males on one side, females on the other. It seems like for every 10 males, you have one female. Just thought that might be helpful to you.
What?
Matty Johns said, yeah, Dez. No, we know that. We've got people. We got people that work that out. We know that. Dez said, okay. And that was the call.
Is that a legitimate story?
Like, that's a story. That's not verbatim. So the statistics in there might be wrong. It might be 20-1. Yeah, I don't know. But that's a story that Matty Johns told. I can't say if it's true or not because I wasn't there to witness the call. But that's the call. So my point of that story being that Dez, I think, is a smart guy. He knows what he knows what he has to do. He knows, look, he's like, okay, so it probably helps their radio show to know what kind of callers they have. If it's male, female, they can tailor the show better. But Dez lives in his own world, and I think he doesn't realise that everyone's caught up with him. These little ploys of naming players on the bench and switching around, it doesn't fool anybody. They know what he's going to do, but Dez lives in his own little bubble, and he doesn't realise.
You can see him every Tuesday sniggering out. That Frawley number 20?
Exactly, and it's not necessary, but for some reason he continues to do it. I think he also just likes to take the piss a little bit, and he just likes to mess around with people. So Dez is Dez. It's pretty annoying as a Bulldogs fan because Teamless Tuesday essentially means nothing to us.
Do you think Frawley knows if he's going to play or not?
Yeah, I think Dez probably gives them somewhat of a game plan. Probably not right now. Yeah, probably closer to the game. I also don't know if Dez knows what he's going to do. But look, I actually do see them playing a similar game plan to last week. I do think Frawley will be on the bench as well. And I think we'll probably see the first 20 minutes of Leacher there. They'll probably, I'm guessing Dez's idea or somewhat of an idea there is they play a certain style for the first 20, get the team to think that they maybe have it over the Dogs, and then hit them with the big guy and he comes in.
I think Dez is half being like Lombardi from the NFL, who's like the greatest coach of all time, and half being the coach from The Waterboy in like the first half of the movie when he's like sitting on the football going, like just being completely insane and really having no idea what he's doing.
Look, he could be a crazy genius.
Yeah.
And his record somewhat suggests that.
Yeah.
Because he gets his teams to the finals, but he does it in such a backwards way that you're like, how is he doing this? How are they getting to the finals every year when they're arguably the worst team in the competition? Because that's what it seems like they are. They play like they're the worst team. Not lately. They've been playing well the last 3 weeks. But the last couple of seasons, they play terribly. But somehow they win games and make the finals and grand finals at times.
I remember you saying to me the year that they made the grand final against Souths. And you said, I think Dez has got a plan. I think he's going to throw a few games to make everyone sort of not expect the Dogs to do anything, let them fall out of the top four, and then let them go and just take all the momentum to the grand final. And that's exactly what they did.
Yeah.
It's like, it's too insane not to be true.
See, Dez doesn't fly under the radar. He digs a hole and goes under the earth. So that's Dez. Let's move on from that game. We've got the Roosters and the Dragons. We've got a one-day break, and then we've got Tuesday games on Anzac Day. So we've got the classic Anzac Day clash of the Roosters-Dragons. This is fourth versus first. So a top four clash. Potentially our first top four clash of the season. I don't actually know if that's true. It may be.
That's pretty amazing.
I'd say it's probably our first real top four clash of the season. We're, 2 months into the season now. Teams have been able to sort of, iron out the creases. So this is when it's starting to get real.
I still can't believe the Dragons are coming first. I think that they'll go on and win this one, but I think it's going to be a really physical game. I think both forward packs will really get in. The matchup with like DeBellin and let's say Boyd Cordner, even though they don't really play at the same position, but still, just those sort of guys are quite experienced and will really just be running the ball hard all game. It's going to be interesting to see who gets on top and who can really run away with it.
Yeah, I think this will probably be the match of the round if both teams show up. I'm tipping the Dragons, but this may be the game where it all comes undone for the Dragons. That's my tip.
The second half of the game against the Cowboys is sort of like warning signs, and it's like, uh-oh.
Yeah, like you said, I think probably DeVellin, Vaughan, those kind of guys that have been playing amazingly this season, those guys play well, Dragons win.
Yeah.
Interesting, I believe, I haven't actually looked at the team list, but I saw an article, I believe Connor Watson and Latrell Mitchell were left out of the Roosters team, which is interesting.
Yeah, because they had Takiaho back, so Watson got the hook last week, and Latrell for giving a rest, apparently.
Which, well, he had a rest last week.
Yeah.
So I don't know how sleepy he is.
He's pretty tired.
Well, someone needs to wake him up. But Connor Watson, I mean, that doesn't make any sense to me. You got to play. He's a great player. He's one of the best young talents at the Roosters, I think. I don't know how they're not playing him on the bench or in their starting lineup. I don't know where, though.
Yeah.
But I think, potential to be the game of the round. It's always a fun one. Anzac Day Clash. They always get a big crowd out there to the Allianz Stadium, and it boosts those Roosters numbers for the year. I think without that game, they'd be averaging about 3 people a game. And then we move on to the 7 p.m. on a Tuesday. Outrageous.
Yeah.
Storm versus Warriors, Australia versus New Zealand, this new sort of Anzac clash that we've had for the last, is it, I don't know if it was last year or 2 years.
Yeah,
but
it's been a while, I think. But yeah, no, that's interesting game. The whole 7 o'clock Tuesday thing is gonna throw me. It's gonna absolutely put my week in complete disarray, but that's okay. The Warriors always seem to one-up the Storm. They always just come to play against them, and some reason they can defend for 80 minutes, like the first time of the season when they play the Storm. So I'm going to tip them to get a really close win, but a good one.
Yeah, I'm pretty much agree. I think it's going to be a very close game. I think both teams will score under 10, so I'm tipping, let's go with 8-6.
Wow, okay.
To finish off the round, yeah. So it's going to be a long round, Friday to Tuesday. We've got a public holiday there at the end there. Could have a different top 8 at the end of it. All right, that is the preview of the round. We're going to move on to our last segment for the night, which is Who Am I? We had Mac playing last week. He's also going to play again this week.
Tied the record last week as well. I'd like to
Did that out. Indeed. So with that in mind, I've made it a little bit harder for the first 5 questions this round. I'm going to kick things off. Oh, sorry, I should explain for those who haven't played before. I've picked either a player or a coach who has played or coached over 100 first grade games. They must have played or coached within the last 10 years. So, I made my debut in 1996. I played 289 first grade games in both the NRL and Super League. That was one clue there. So, 2 clues in total, but that second one was a long one.
Okay.
I played 238 games for one team. Just going to go through those 3 again. I made my debut in 1996. I played 289 first grade games in both the NRL and Super League. I played 238 games for one team. I represented both Australia and New South Wales. This is where the clues start to get a little bit more personal.
Yeah.
I won Hooker of the Year at the 2000 Dally M's. Now, this one is where it really steps up. I won the 2003 Grand Final.
Oh, wow. Okay.
All right.
You keep going? So, yeah, I have 2 people that it could be. Let's keep going.
I did throw that one in quite early. I don't know why.
Yeah.
I also played professional rugby.
Okay. Are you Craig Gower?
Yes, indeed. I am Craig Gower.
That was tricky, though, because obviously Prittis was the hooker in 2003. But
indeed.
There you go. Good one.
Okay, I'll read out the rest of them. I represented Italy in rugby. Probably my favourite one of the night. I once chased Mitchell Pearce with a broken bottle.
I'm so glad you included that in there.
And I played for the Panthers and the Knights.
There you go.
Craig Gower. Good player.
Yeah, good old Gowie. He was, like, fantastic. He was, I would say, underrated, even though he did play for New South Wales and Australia and all that sort of stuff. People didn't give him credit for a lot of areas in his game, like particularly like his toughness and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, he played in an era, you know, the start of his era, he had Ricky Stewart and Alan Langer there. Then he played in an era with Andrew Johns and Brett Camorley. He also played in an era with, I was going to say a hooker's name now, completely. Jeff Tuvey in the back end of his career as well. Yeah. So he definitely competed with a lot of guys for a New South Wales or Australian jersey there. But yeah, one of my favourite players growing up, actually. I love Craig Gower.
Yeah.
He also, I can't remember what year it was, but there was the year where the Dally Ams weren't hosted. It might have been 2003, I'm not sure. They weren't hosted. There was a dispute between the Players Federation or whatever it was and the league. But he was meant to win it. He was the top of the vote. So he That's didn't so get it, cruel. Unfortunately. But I guess in our hearts, he's a true Dally Am for that year. And yeah, and then he had a good career in rugby for a couple of years, represented Italy through grandparents or something. And then Chase Mitchell-Pearce with a bottle, which we all loved.
That's the highlight, yeah.
I wish someone would do that now. and then he came back in 2007 and played 13 games for the Knights to finish out his career. Bit of a shame not to finish as a one-club player, but great to see him back in the league.
Yeah, definitely.
Back in 2007. Wow, was that 2007? That was a lot more. Was it 2000? It couldn't have been 2007.
No, it was later.
No, it was definitely later than that.
Yeah, I thought it was like 2010 maybe. Yeah. Sort of.
Even later, possibly.
Yeah.
Even maybe like 2012, 13.
Yeah.
I don't know why I thought it was 2007 just then.
But it definitely wasn't 2007.
No, it definitely wasn't 2007. He might have still been playing in the NRL before he left in 2007.
It was getting around that time.
I was thinking, oh, I hope he played 10 years ago. I hope I can stop that with my eyes. No, he was. I did enjoy watching Craig Gower play, and he's one of those players that transitioned from hooker to halfback to hooker.
Yeah.
And a bit of a Peter Wallace. Definitely, Peter Wallace is a modern day Craig Gower, I guess.
Do you think he got replaced by Luke Walsh?
Nothing wrong with Luke Walsh, except his football talent.
And his hair.
Well.
Yeah. I'm sorry, that was mean. If you're listening, Luke, I'm really sorry about that.
We do go to, all the way to England. Is he still playing in England?
I don't know.
He'd be getting of age these days, I guess. He probably still is.
Yeah.
Okay, that is the podcast done for this week. We've got the Anzac round coming up, so we don't know when we'll be back next week. It might be a Wednesday, might be Monday before the Anzac Day games. Who knows? It's all a mystery. We'll see you then.
You've just listened to the Golden Point. Well done.